Harmony.
Hey guys, this is Dennis Kang.
Hey, this is Rashad
Evans. This is Diamond Salisbury.
Hey everybody, this is Joe L.T.J. Dirksen.
Hey guys, this is Jason Anthony McDonald.
Hey everybody, you are listening to the world's most handsome fighter on the planet. Yes, this is Al Wapo, and you are listening to Full Contact Fighter Radio with Kelsey Mowat.
Thank you for tuning in to Full Contact Fighter Radio. I am your host, Kelsey Mowat, coming to you from Vancouver, British Columbia. Joining me now is Mr. Brendan Lear from lovely Edmonton. How are you doing, Brendan?
I'm having the weirdest experience of deja vu.
Yeah, well, for people, and they'll never really know the true what happened. It has unfolded in the last couple of minutes, but we've messed up the intro a couple times. So.
And hence, I'm very well, Kelsey. How are you?
And hence is the reason why we need people to do the script.
Script. We need more scripts.
So that this, you know, terrible aberration doesn't continue. Brendan, we've got an interesting show today. We've got Jake Shields coming on the program, one of the state's better 170-pound fighters, I think a very well-kept secret. And we've also got Rory Markham, another great 170-pound fighter from Team Miljic. He'll be joining us on the show. And Jake Shields is coming off a big win this past weekend in San Francisco. He took out Steve Berger by TKO in the second round. The same card, Uriah Faber also came away with the win. And so,
card was that, Kels?
The FCP, I believe. And Malice at the Mad Palace?
Malice at the Cow Palace.
Right.
Not the Mad Cow Palace, yeah. But just the Cow Palace.
For some of our American listeners, you know, we've had some problems with Mad Cow up here in Canada, and my brain is inundated with wanting to say Mad Cow instead of Cow.
I don't think there was any prion transmission during the event.
Yeah, let's hope so. And Jeremy Horn took on Matt Lindland this past weekend, but it sounds like Matt Lindland was very dominating in the win over Horn, so that was interesting. Then there's the MFC in Edmonton, which you were able to attend.
I did.
And we'll talk about that a little bit. And as well, Pride, and we got to go through the picks, which you came away with the victory, buddy.
Did I?
I believe so.
Thinking back now, I can't recall. I wasn't really thinking about it.
I think you were.
You know, it was just so good. The show was just so good. You couldn't even think about yourself.
It's true. It was an amazing show. And speaking of amazing shows, let's hope we have one, and let's hope the show is far more entertaining than this last 2 minutes was. You're listening to Full Contact Fighter Radio.
Some things are worth fighting for. 14 American mixed martial artists will battle in the jungles of Costa Rica. 7 will earn the right to fight the Russian Red Devil Team in front of the world, live on pay-per-view. Only they know what this fight means to them, and they'll get their chance to prove it on Bodog Fight. The fight begins September 19th. Check local listings or visit BodogFight.com for more details.
By now, you've probably seen dozens of your favorite MMA fighters wearing full contact fighter clothing. But hey, listen, you don't have to be a champion to dress like one. With the FCF shop, we have all that you require for your fight wear needs. From NHB corduroy hats, tricot jackets to camo board shorts, or the NHB Extreme Fight shorts, our famous hoodies, to the classic full contact fighter t-shirts, all your MMA clothing can be found at www.fcfighter.com. Pick up the latest edition of the FCF paper, or you can also reach FCF to place an order by calling 516-676-0033. Also now open is a full contact fighter sticker and banner shop, plus a full assortment of all your favorite official IFL team clothing is now available at fcfighter.com, or call us. Again, that number is 516-676-0033. Full Contact Fighter, the undefeated, no-holds-barred new source of the world. Welcome back to Full Contact Fighter Radio, and joining us now is Rory Markham. Rory, how are you doing?
How's it going, man?
I'm doing very well. Where are you down training with Team Miljic as always right now?
Yeah, as always.
Now, Rory's got a fight upcoming September 23rd against Luke Stewart, I believe, unless there's been an opponent change. Moline, Illinois on the card that features Pat Miljic taking on Enzo Gracie. And Rory, how is the training coming along, and what do you know about Luke Stewart?
You know, training's coming along great. It's good to have everybody back, especially to have Pat back in the room and, you know, working with us and, you know, being a training partner for the first time. You know, I'm so used to him just being, you know, being a coach, and, you know, my whole career has been under his tutelage. Now it's like I'm one of his, just for the time being, you know, his one of his peers in the room, and we kind of get to, you know, I get to grapple with him every day and spar and stuff. So that's really cool. And about Luke Stewart, I know, you know, I'm pretty sure he's a black belt in jiu-jitsu like most of these guys are. And on on paper, he only looks like he's 1-0 in MMA, but, you know, I just, I've learned my lessons from underestimating my opponents by their records in the past, so I'm training like I would for any other fight.
What's it like down there, and when did you make the decision in your life to move down and train with Pat? Because it's kind of like a destination location for training. Not many, I imagine he doesn't draw all his fighters from directly in and around where you live. So at what point in your life did you decide to make that big commitment and move out to...
3 years ago. I made the commitment 4 years ago, and I spent about a year really trying to, like, round off my skills and things like that. But then 3 years ago, I made the final move and went down and see if I could hang with the best, you know. It's funny because most of our team is from all over the country. Not, you know, we don't have... we've got maybe three or four guys that are actually from Davenport.
And what's that like? I mean, obviously, like you mentioned, it's a little different this time because you got Pat fighting and he hasn't fought in a couple of years. And I would take it then that there's probably some interesting sparring sessions going on, and you guys probably as a whole are going up against a team that you're pretty certain of what the game plan's going to be.
Pretty certain, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, it's pretty... You know, our idea is, you know, conditioning is always our base. And now that we've got Pat back in the room, you know, we're really, really pushing the pace. And, you know, can't really get out of sparring after 10 rounds. You know, we all got to do 12 and then do the extra things after. And we just want to make sure that we're working harder than any other team out there.
Right.
So,
and, do you find this a good opportunity to take out some resentment against Pat, actually getting him on the mat?
No, man, I'm not good enough yet. That guy, he still tools me.
you think Pat hasn't lost much, and this isn't a geezer match, but a legitimate high caliber MMA match?
Yeah, not at all. I mean, Pat's been in the room, you know, for the 3 years that I've been down there. I mean, he's grappled almost every night, you know, unless, you know, something's really bothering him. You know, he's not just a coach that, you know, just sits on the sidelines. He gets right in there, and, you know, especially when Matt's down and things like that, they always like to roll. So, you know, Pat's been kind of, you know, just staying right on the border of in shape, you know, for the last 3 years. Now all he had to do was really kind of peak for this fight. You know, that'll definitely show on the 23rd.
Now, coming up, this is your third fight in the IFL, and I don't know if you saw it, but a couple months ago, man, pretty prestigious honor. I'd say front cover, full contact fighter. Did you check that out?
Oh, dude, did I see it, man? I called Joel, and I had like 10, 15 issues sent to my house, and
yeah.
Passed them all around the south side of Chicago, dude. I mean, yeah, I was freaking. That was awesome.
No, that was against Brad Blackburn. Just talk us through that fight. I believe he won that fight by TKO.
Yeah. What's it called? He was a lot quicker than I at first anticipated. The first round, he came out and he stuck me with a lot of lead rights. So it was he was kind of hard to time. And then he'd pop a takedown out of nowhere, and you're just like, whoa, you know, when you're first trying to recover from a shot, and then, you know, he hit the takedown, so it was hard to time because he was so athletic.
Yeah.
And he's going to give a lot of people fits because he is that athletic. And, you know, I was just lucky enough to catch him in the second. You know, my corner, Pat, had told me when I was in the corner, he's like, man, he goes, if you hit this guy, he's going to fall down. He goes, just go out there and hit him. Because I was going in, I'd cover the distance, and then I'd back out after I'd get hit. So I wouldn't gain any ground. I'd just sit there and get hit. So I made the adjustment within like 10 seconds of the next round. Kind of, it showed.
Yeah.
Rory, how many 170 fighters are there at Miletich you consider to be your level?
Oh, geez. I don't know if I'm even in their levels. You got Jason Black, who cuts from, he's 170, 160 in Pride. You know, Matt Hughes, you know, there's a guy, obviously everyone knows what level he's on. You got Matt, you got Pat, you know, there's everywhere to turn, you know, Josh Neer, me and Josh are probably right on the same level. You know, Spencer, he's 155 now, but he walks around at 70. That guy's an amazing talent. Everybody, you know, and we've got so much raw talent in the room right now. It's pretty insane, especially to be a 170er. It's pretty easy to find a good training partner.
So in such a big school, you guys are a school that when people need fighters, they go to the well. How do you decide who fights out of the group of fighters that are that fall under the same management and come from the same school? What are the politics of that decision making involve?
Well, with let's see here, politics kind of fall on what events, what fighters are going to go to. Since, like you said, we do have such a high roster, big roster of talent. We Monty decides some, but Pat decided who he's going to have on his IFL team. So we were handpicked by Pat to be on the IFL team. And as for at the time, Jason Black, he had Pride, he had the Pride contract coming up, and Josh is already obligated to UFC organization, and you got Ben Uecker, who's kind of floating around 85 and 70 for the alternate for the IFL. So I pretty much covered it. We kind of got everybody. Everybody's got fights and nice, pretty good organization. So it just kind of falls on especially with the IFL team. There's you want kind of a little more diverse group. You don't want all ground guys or this and that. You want some strikers. You want some ground guys. You want a guy who's good at jiu-jitsu. You want a guy who's good at everything.
Did all the IFL coaches handpick their own teams, or did the IFL recruit fighters from elsewhere as well?
From what I understand, I think pretty much the coaches had to say.
Yeah, they did. Rory, a couple months ago, I would say, and maybe I'm wrong, but as far as your biggest victory that sort of turned heads was against Mike Pyle. Mike Pyle and yourself were regarded as two of the better welterweights up and coming outside of the UFC, which is, I guess traditionally everyone would say that is the biggest organization in North America.
Yeah.
And I believe we gave you the full contact fighter, we gave you the MVP for the first IFL, where you knocked out Mike Pyle, I think it was in 16 seconds, something crazy like that.
Yeah.
What was that like for you? I mean, am I right in saying, assuming that was the biggest win in your career thus far?
Absolutely, in that, it propelled me into, it put me under the people a little more closer, put more people, drew more attention towards me, with Mike being, I think he had wins over Shoney Carter, and I think Gil Castillo, and WEC champion, beating somebody like him, that really, it turns heads, and that's kind of what I needed, to kind of get the spotlight a little more on me, so I could showcase my skills. Nothing that I haven't been doing. I'm 10-2 in MMA, and it wasn't something that I hadn't been doing. It's just it's nice to get have names to fight now. In the IFL, I didn't ever want to just jump in and start fighting names. I was never that guy. I told everybody right away, I don't want to get into the cage or into the ring, and I don't want to be the guy that everyone says, all right, I'll fight anybody. I want to. After about 3 years, there's something about 3 years, the Miletic camp, that's when everyone really starts coming into their stride. So, it's almost perfect that, the IFL and my 3 years, it's kind of destiny for those two to kind of come up at the same time.
Yeah.
And now I get to fight names, and, I feel that, I can take on world-class competition.
Well, when I talked to you before, we were doing a story on you for Full Contact Fighter, and for those people who might have missed the article, so this is kind of a repeat question for you, but I think people might want to hear this, is that you had told me before that, you had won 7 in a row, you're going into the IFL, and then you lost to Trevor Garrett, and you always felt that maybe you were looking beyond Trevor Garrett towards Mike Pyle. Is that, for people out there, maybe to explain your thoughts on that?
Well, yeah, it's never, that's what's, even though this whole, how do you feel about fighting for a team and all that, that's fine. But in the end, it's an individual. It's an individual fight, and you can never look past that moment. There's moments in a fight. A whole entire fight is—it's a moment. You can't look past it or before it. You have to just live in that moment in order to operate at your best ability. So when I was fighting Trevor, or preparing for Trevor, I was like, I don't really have to peak for this fight. I want to peak for my next fight. It was the dumbest thing I could have done,
Yeah.
And not to be all scientific, but yeah, it is important when you peak and everything's, you're firing on all cylinders. So, I wasn't in the best shape, and I was pretty much looking right past him and towards Mike because he had such a huge name. So that name recognition kind of took away from my, the current battle that I had in the forefront. So stepping out there, I wasn't as prepared as I should have been, and the outcome was inevitable.
What kind of conditioning do you do outside of the actual work you do inside the gym? So in terms of getting your cardio up and getting in better shape, you say, how much of that is your own personal responsibility as a fighter rather than working out with your team?
100%, I'd say, 110%. In the morning, Pat's not there. He's not knocking on your door saying, all right, man, it's time to go up and it's time to get up and do your road work. It's time to, you know, do your sprints and this and that. It's, you know, there's times when we all get together and do sprints and things like that. But, for the most part, you know, your conditioning's on your own. I'm blessed in that I love to condition. That's something I love to do. I love to get out there. I love to get on the road. I love to do sprints. You know, I just read a book about Prefontaine. I mean, I enjoy running a lot of, something that, just helps kind of cleanse my spirit. So that I have no problem with, but it's pretty much, you gotta do it on your own. That's, you know, team practice is at night, but in the mornings is when we're supposed to do our conditioning and our weights and things like that.
And what do you normally walk around at, Rory? Are you one of those guys that floats around 170, or do you cut down quite a bit?
95.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
195.
So it's got to be an intense last couple of weeks before the fight then, I would assume.
It's insane. You got to get real short with people.
So we're probably talking to you just on the cusp of you becoming a nasty prick.
Yeah, honestly, yeah. I mean, these last 2 weeks are the hardest, you know, 10, you know, 10 this week, 15, 16 next week.
Have you developed the mastery of cutting so it's not as painful now, or is it as bad every time?
It's about as bad every time. I mean, this is my third cut to 170, so we'll, you know, it's good to be. I'm around the right people. You know, I've got, you know, Pat and Tim and Spencer. You know, they've all, you know, Tim so much because he's been around it, but, you know, Pat, Matt, Spencer, you know, they've had to, Spencer cuts an enormous amount of weight too, so he's helped me out a lot with that. You know,
so about, do they have a picture of, do they have all your pictures up in Dairy Queen saying don't
sell
to these guys and
eat roar? No, you know, I've never had a sweets problem, but I have a meat problem, you know, meat and potatoes kind of guy. I'm Irish.
Yeah, I can identify with that.
Yeah.
You know, this, like I said before, it's going to be your third fight in the IFL, and, you know, we've had a couple guys from the IFL on the show. And, you know, up here in Canada, some of the IFL fights have been shown on Sportsnet, and they pick up the Fox Sports feed. What's that been like for you, Rory, the fact that, you know, some of your fights now have been, you know, nationally shown down in the States? Are people, you know, watching it? Are they starting to realize, do you feel, that there's more to MMA than just the UFC?
Yeah, thank God, too. I mean, that's something we needed. I mean, when, you know, when it first started coming out, everybody's like, oh, you know, is it that team stuff? And now, you know, the second one showed, and, you know, now it's picking up steam. I was in Canada a couple months ago doing a seminar, and it was funny. Like, I was with Tim, and everyone, of course, recognized Tim, but then people were recognizing me. And I'm like, well, he's like, I just saw your fight the other day on Rogers Sportsnet. And I was like, whoa.
Yeah.
Like, that's pretty crazy, man. You know, so it's good because, honestly, you don't want one organization holding, controlling the entire sport.
Yeah.
I mean, that's just dumb. If more organizations pop up and more money gets put out there, then it forces everyone, you know, to compete for the higher competition, you know, and eventually we're going to hear about, you know, like, you never hear about a Don King promotion or any of that. You hear about an Oscar De La Hoya fight. And eventually, you know, hopefully we'll just hear about, like, you know, a Pat Miletich fight or, you know, Matt Hughes fight, things like that. Because, you know, to have one organization control that, it's more like the WWE, you know, where people will be like, all right, this is how much I'm going to pay you, and you can't go anywhere else. I have no other competition, so you're either stuck with this or you can retire. And that's not how we should be. Like, every fight really can be our last. So I'm really excited that more sport, you know, more organizations, especially like the IFL, that actually does really care for its fighters, you know, more organizations like this, you know, pop up, and, you know, they help set, you know, set a precedent for other organizations, especially like the IFL. You got guys who are, you know, taking care of their fighters, looking out for their fighters, making sure everything is very professional, making sure we're taken care of. And, you know, that kind of, it's hard to look away from them then. You know, it's like now another organization would have to compete with that. They'd have to compete with a level of class now. You know, so it's really good for the sport. This all, more competition, that all brings us to a higher level. You know, we'll all go up, even the UFC. It doesn't matter if the IFL gets higher or better than the UFC, we'll all go up from it. You know, everyone will. It's not, no one will get higher than the other. The whole sport of MMA should rise, not one organization.
Yeah.
Following up your comments, you guys had a sort of celebrity training partner for a while in the form of that gigantic pro wrestler, Brock Lesnar. What do you think about, first of all, what were your reflections and getting to roll with him a little bit? And what do you think about these sort of, I don't want to call his entry into MMA a freak show entry, you know, like the Giant Silva or anything like that. But it's a sort of sensationalistic ploy playing off other success that he's had. What do you think about people like that coming into MMA? Do you think that's insulting in the sense to real, like, sort of grassroots fighters like you? And number two, what do you think about his entrance personally? What do you think about his prospects?
Well, here's the thing. I don't know much about Brock, because that guy, he got to work every time he was there. So, but I'll say this much. For people that are, expecting a WWE star to enter the ring, I mean, they're going to be in for a rude awakening. And this isn't bias at all. Like, I honestly said maybe three words to the guy, but I know this much. He's an insane athlete. I mean, he's the national wrestling champ. I mean, he has legit credentials, so... And coupled with his work ethic, he's going to be very, very good. I mean, he's a collegiate national champion in wrestling. That's huge. That's like the highest honor you can get at the college level. You take that coupled with, you know, his athleticism, his size and his strength. I mean, he's like a cat too. He moves like a cat. Everyone, like, I didn't get to roll with him or anything because I'm not a heavyweight, but, you know, Mike C and Ben Rothwell were like, dude, the guy's, he's freakishly athletic and agile. I mean, so he's going to be hell on wheels once he really gets his, you know, bearings under him. And plus, he's going to have a nice little curve. He's going to learn this stuff real quick, I can tell.
Yeah. Well, there's certainly been a lot of hype surrounding him, and a lot of people are curious to see what's next for him.
But not to avoid the other question here is, you know, I really think that personally he's an exception. He was one wrestler that did have, he has actual credentials, you know, in his background, so he could easily make the progression in MMA. Other things like that, if they want to start bringing in freak shows, it's going to do nothing but tarnish our sport. Because being, you know, like you said, being a grassroots fighter, you know, it's the fighter first. You gotta, you know, I don't think anybody should really be in this if they haven't really wanted this for a very long time. And, you know, I mean, you look at some of the old UFCs. I was just watching an old fight, you know, last night, and I was like, geez, man, how far it's come. And, you know, you keep throwing freak shows in there, like, people are liking the sport right now because of its athleticism that you can, and it's easy to watch, you know, and you can tell how athletic, you know, we are as fighters. So I don't really think that there's any room for, you know, there's no need to, you know, put any freak shows or anything like that to kind of draw, you know, an audience in. We already have our audience. Let's play with it from there and just become better athletes. You know what I mean?
Yeah. So this isn't your clever way of calling out Giant Silva then, Rory? Or?
Yeah, you know, I'll choke that bastard out. Put that guy in his ass. I don't care.
Well, Rory, you know, we appreciate you coming on the show, man, and I know you're getting into the peak time here as far as cutting weight and the IFL fight coming up on the September 23rd. So we appreciate you taking time out, and we wish you all the best of luck against Luke Stewart.
Yeah, thanks a lot, man. Anytime. I'd do this anytime. I like doing this stuff.
And if we can't get Giant Silva, who would you rather have, Wesley Snipes or Zulu Hino?
Ooh, give me Wesley, dude. I want to beat his ass with the last couple blades he put out there.
All right, we'll work
All right,
on
man.
It.
All right, cool.
Okay.
Thanks a lot, guys.
Mixed martial arts legends collide at the Midwestern debut of the International Fight League, Saturday, September 23rd at the Mark of the Quad Cities in Moline, Illinois. See the wildest International Fight League team competition yet as the Quad City Silverbacks defend their home turf against the New York Pit Bulls. And be there to witness the return of hometown hero Pat Milicic as he squares off in a fight to the finish against jiu-jitsu master Enzo Gracie. 11 total fights, including Quad City taking on New York and the San Jose Razor Claws, led by Frank Shamrock, battling the Toronto Dragons, coached by Carlos Newton. Plus, the historic super match of Milicic versus Gracie. It all happens Saturday, September 23rd at the Mark of the Quad Cities in Moline, Illinois. Tickets start at $28.50 and are on sale now at Ticketmaster.com. Or charge by phone at 563-326-1111. That's 563-326-1111. The International Fight League. Pure sport. For more information, go to IFL.TV. Cards subject to change.
Cage Fury Fighting Championship is coming to Atlantic City Friday, October 6th. This event guarantees nonstop action and a special appearance by Frank Shamrock. The excitement starts the day before at the weigh-in pre-party at the 4040 Club. Don't miss all the excitement. Tickets on sale now at Ticketmaster.com or CageFuryFighting.com.
Joining us now on Full Contact Fighter Radio is Mr. Jake Shields. Jake, how are you doing today?
I'm doing pretty good. Just kicking back, relaxing.
Now, Jake, of course, won a fight over Steve Berger at the FCP at the Cow Palace in San Francisco this past weekend, a TKO in the second round. And Jake, what was that? I mean, my first question for you is, what was the fight like against Steve Berger? Did it unfold kind of in the way you thought it was going to?
Yeah, I mean, it kind of went just how I planned it. I mean, that's always nice because you never know how it can go till it's over, but that's kind of what I was thinking would happen. If you're kind of go out there, you know, I knew he's a tough guy, you hang in there. So the first round, you know, I really was bringing the pressure, you know, kept passing his guard, going mount, hitting him, but he's a tough guy, kept surviving, and then finally in the second, I think he just had too much, and I was able to start landing the heavy strikes and put him out.
And what was the event like? I mean, the FCP, is this a fairly new event, or, you know,
It was their first promotion, but it seemed like it went pretty good. I mean, I didn't watch any of the fights. I was in my locker room the whole time, but when I came out there, it looked like a good crowd. I think I read somewhere like over 6,000 tickets or something. So
yeah.
For their first show in San Francisco, it went really well.
I think it may be one of the best show names I've ever heard. Malice at Cow Palace.
Yeah, definitely an interesting name. Had a little ring to it.
Jake, I wanted to ask you a question about where you're training now. Who did you prepare for this fight with, and who are some of your training partners?
Well, I'm still part of the Senior Gracie team, so, you know, I'm out training with Nick Diaz and all those guys. But I'm also doing a lot of training on my own. You know, I'm teaching out at Meritech, so I do a lot of my training over there. I got Gilbert Melendez with me. You know, he's really good. I mean, the Bay Area, all kinds of guys rotate through. I mean, even now and again, I even drive down to San Jose to go look out at the AKA guys. They got a good group down there. You know, David Terrell up in Santa Rosa. I mean, I'm surrounded by good people. I got a new boxing trainer, too, a couple months ago, and that's, you know, making a huge difference. I've done kickboxing, but I just now started boxing, and I feel like I'm making a huge improvement, so...
So it sounds like there's a real critical mass of fighters down there that you can train with and cross camps and
yeah, I know. I'm really lucky. I'm just surrounded, you know. Especially right in San Francisco, which is like right in the center of the Bay Area. So a lot of people come to me because I'm like kind of right in the center. So people from everywhere, you know, San Jose, you know, Santa Rosa, Nick from Stockton. It's like, yeah, people come to my place from all over to train. So I do lots of great training.
Jake, I know you've got a family and you work, like you said, you're an instructor at the Fairtex Center. How is that for you, having to balance family life, instructing and fighting? Is it still a tough balance to maintain?
It is, but not too bad. You know, like, I have been instructing a lot. I've been trying to cut down my instruction a little bit because, you know, I've been doing like 7 classes a week. I'm trying to drop it down to like 5. Starting making enough money fighting now, so just trying to, you know, just really focus on the fighting, but trying to focus on training too. Like I said, I got a daughter, so... Try and find to take care of her. It's, I mean, a little difficult, but I managed to balance it out. At least I don't have to work. That's nice.
Yeah.
Jake, before the Rumble in the Rock tournament, welterweight tournament, you were kind of known as the best kept secret at 170. And when you won the tournament, it was widely expected that you would come out and no longer be a best kept secret. And now, at least from popular MMA media, it seems like you're still kind of a best kept secret. So what do you think about that? Is that a correct impression?
Yeah, I mean, I think so. You know, I think I'm one of the most underrated guys out there. People are really surprised. What I'm about to break out, though. But I'm starting to get some good offers now, so I think I'm going to be, you know, in the big shows here really soon. So
yeah, I mean,
I have some things on the table, so it's just a matter of what I go with right now.
You're saying that you've had some offers and we might see you on some bigger shows soon?
Yeah, I know. It's definitely looking that way. I got some things in the works, so talking to a couple different big shows, you know. So, yeah, it looks like I'll be on TV for the next fight, hopefully.
Yeah.
Did you give us any hints, or is everything still under wraps?
Well, I talked to a few shows, but, I mean, right now, well, I'm talking, you know, Pride UFC, obviously, but there's also this World Fighter show, which is looking really promising, you know. I mean, it's always risky going with a new show, but they're definitely making me look like it's going to be worthwhile, so.
That's the WFA?
No, it's the World Fighter. It's a brand new organization. It hasn't had a show yet, but they got a lot of money, and it seems to be, you know, definitely seems to be legit at this point.
Do you know who's responsible for that promotion?
You know, the president's Jason, what's your last name? Jason Gracie's involved with it a little bit, and it's like, I mean, they definitely got money. I mean, something's definitely going on. I mean, I hope they don't fall apart, but definitely it's looking really good at this point, so.
No, I was reading
that's not going to be until January, I think, with that show, so I could fight before then, but the problem is it'd be hard to, you know, most all these shows want to put you a 3-fight contract, so.
Yeah. Well, I guess for sure January's still a little bit of ways away.
But I want to be able to get 3 fights by then, for sure.
Yeah, no kidding. I was reading an interview with you, and it was on MMA Weekly, and apparently Frank Trigg on one of the Pride pay-per-views doing the color commentating made some comment about Jay Ku, and for some of those people who didn't see that article, maybe you could explain or go over again your reaction to that comment from Frank.
Oh, yeah, really, I think it's just pathetic. You know, if the guy doesn't have any attention in fighting me, I don't know why he was still trying to talk crap, you know. Like, the guy didn't make it in the tournament I won, and then he tried to act like he doesn't know who I am. It's kind of... I don't know. I've never liked training, and I still don't. So, but unfortunately, I don't think he'll ever have the ball to step up and fight me.
Yeah, like, I don't remember him saying that, but like I said, the article made mention of it. Did you hear him say that on the broadcast?
I watched it later. I didn't see it at the time. People were more telling me about it before it happened. I mean, it's, by the time I seen it, I knew that they would do, though, because everyone kept telling me, oh, Frank Cherry was talking shit about you. So I thought it was big. It wasn't really that big of a deal. It was kind of a small thing, but it's still disappointing that he would talk shit about, you know, after he couldn't even make it to me in the tournament.
Two, I wanted to ask you about Jake is you've got a draw against Misaki, who did very well in the last middleweight tournament in Pride. Did that surprise you at all? Have you know a guy who's fought him? I mean, you probably know firsthand, but his result against Dan Henderson, were you even surprised at seeing that?
No, I wasn't surprised. I knew, you know, it didn't surprise me at all. You know, he's a really good fighter. After I fought him, before I fought him, I know he was good. I kind of went over there having no idea who he was. I went out there and realized how tough he was. Like I said, it ended up being a draw. It was a really tough fight. So
yeah,
it doesn't surprise me. He's doing that well.
You've had much of your success overseas, especially in Japan. Would you prefer to go back to Japan, or would you actually like to settle down in the States and stay closer to your family and fight over here?
I would actually like to fight in the U.S., you know. Now, this is getting big in the U.S. I prefer to fight here. With blowing up California and Vegas and everything, if I see in U.S. TV, fight here. I've already had so many fights in Japan, you know, it's kind of a pain in the ass going with the jet lag and all that.
Yeah.
So.
When you look around the welterweight division, Jake, and you're talking about, we were talking about the fact you're one of the division's best kept secrets. Who out there do you see yourself matching up well against as far as the bigger names go?
I think I can do good with all of them. You know, I think I can fight any of those guys. I mean, I think the best guys, I mean, there's some really good fighters out there, obviously, guys like Hugh, St. Pierre, and BJ, but
yeah.
I think I can beat any of those guys. I think all three of those would be great fights. It might be easy, but I think Cape will beat them all. Other than that, I think I can beat anyone out there. Like, I'm pretty sure I beat almost anyone else out there almost every time, other than that. I mean, obviously, make it happen in fights, but...
Jake, what do you think about the big welterweight matchup coming up in the UFC? Do you have a favorite in that?
I'm going to have to go with Hughes, man. He's just looking so dominant lately. It's hard to go against him. I mean, BJ has beat him before, but I'm going to pick Hughes, so... I picked Hughes last time, and I was wrong, so who knows?
Well, it'll be interesting to see what happens. I mean, obviously, if BJ wins... It'll be interesting to see what the UFC does, whether or not they match him up against George St. Pierre, or if they do George St. Pierre versus Matt Hughes in that rematch.
It gives different possibilities.
Yeah, but speaking of the UFC, Jake, notice one of your opponents in the Rumble in the Rock tournament, Yushin Okami, is now fighting in the UFC and won his first fight in the UFC.
Yeah.
Do you envision yourself fighting him again? We didn't get to see that fight. But many people said that Okami very well could have got the decision on you. Would you like to revisit that match?
I'd fight him again. I'm not like I said, I'm not trying to fight him again, but I definitely would. He's fighting up at 85 now, so I mean, if he went, I don't think he'd want to come back down to 75, but I'd maybe meet him at a weight. But I mean, personally, I felt like I won that fight, but I'd be willing to fight him again.
Well, Brendan, do you have anything else for Jake?
That's it, Jake. Thanks for taking your time out, and good luck wherever you end up.
Yeah, thank you.
Have you subscribed to Full Contact Fighter? FCF is the undefeated, no-holds-barred news source of the world, and no avid MMA fan should ever miss an issue. For years now, FCF has been providing MMA enthusiasts in-depth coverage of the world's greatest sport. Each issue contains event reports and photos from across the globe, including coverage from Japan, Brazil, Britain, Canada, and the United States. From fighter bios, technical advice, to training tips, FCF is the only publication that brings you all the MMA coverage you need every month, 12 times a year. Check out www.fcfighter.com for subscription information or call 516-676-0033. Full Contact Fighter, the undefeated, no-holds-barred news source of the world. Hey guys, Kelsey Mowat here from Full Contact Fighter Radio. Listen, if you have any comments, questions, or just want to flat out tell me off, contact me at radio@fcfighter.com. That address, again, is radio@fcfighter.com.
Any correspondence that is sent to Mr. Moa must be presented in business letter format in aerial script with a font point no larger than 12 and no smaller than 8. All letters must be written in UK English and must be received by Mr. Moa before no later than 12 hours prior to the posting of this program. Any fiscal donations must be in Canadian currency, and please pay no attention to this previous statement.
Well, Brendan, there's some interesting comments from Jake Shields and Roy Markham, and it'll be definitely interesting to see if Jake Shields does end up signing with UFC or that other promotion he was talking about, the WFO. Definitely a guy who's got a ton of skill and, you know, pretty charismatic guy, I guess you could say. So, you know, it's definitely served for some great matchups if he was to get in a bigger show and fight some top-ranked competition.
Well, those guys are just, both of them are just demonstrations of how incredibly deep the division is, you know, 170. And I think there's lots of fighters, lots of great fighters to go around to all these shows. And I don't know anything about this new show. It'll be interesting to find out a little bit more about it when it all comes together.
Yeah, without question. It's just more and more of these kind of promotions are popping up. And you know, I think now they're with the success of the UFC and the fact that they're starting to generate some very significant money, you're going to see other people with money want to get a piece of that action, you know. So it's a little different than a few years ago where you kind of had, you know, and give credit to the Ferretta brothers and Dana White for people who had the vision back then and were supporting MMA without necessarily any guarantee of making money. But, you know, there's some of these new promoters who are taking a chance, albeit, but, you know, it's definitely things are changing, and it's great for the sport to see such tremendous growth.
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to some promoters who come in and have more money than sense, so we get some really outlandish, disastrous, gigantic shows.
Yeah, that'd be sweet. You know, go down the same road as boxing, and that'd be great
exactly.
for the sport. But
exactly.
Let's get into it. We've got so
well,
much.
I have,
to talk
I have
about.
The pitch. I have the pitch right here, Kels.
Yeah.
Here's the pitch. I was watching Pride on the weekend, and someone was commenting about how unfair it was that Krokop had so much time to revive himself. So here's my pitch: tournament. But you have two fights going on at the same time in the same ring. That's my pitch.
Same ring.
That's how you do the fair tournament.
Yeah.
Two fights, two referees.
I don't think you're going to get very far with that pitch, buddy.
Hey, anyone with $2 million, you just give me a call and we'll promote it.
Right. Well, Brendan, the good news for you, other than that ridiculous idea you just had, is that you came away with the win, man. As far as our picks go, the ongoing rivalry in Saga continues, but you came away with the win. I believe on that event you had two picks against my zero as far as the edge. That was a difference. You picked Barnett to beat Nogueira, and I picked Nogueira to beat Barnett, so that's one for you.
Mm-hmm.
And the other one I think where we differed was you picked Alexander Emelianenko to take out Kharitonov, and I picked Kharitonov, so I believe the final tally now in this grandiose race is 4-3 for you.
Oh, very nice.
Yeah, nicely done.
Very nice.
But I have to say, props to both of us for picking. We both picked Krokop to win the tournament.
You betcha.
Which is kind of interesting that we were right about something for once.
But, I know. And the most amazing thing was that, you know, when you're talking probabilities, you've got to times them, right? So me picking something correctly is very highly improbable, and you picking something correctly is just improbable. But when you times those two together, you have like super high improbability. And then we did it. So there you go.
That gives anyone hope, I think. Because that should give lots of people hope. But you know, in all seriousness, no, it was a great card. And man, I mean, Krokop just tearing through Vanderlei. That was, you know, I predicted Krokop to beat Vanderlei, but I did not think it would go like that.
And the interesting thing was, you know, going into that fight, I think I said, and I still believe, that Vanderlei had nothing to lose in that fight, and Krokop had everything to lose, which I thought would make Krokop a little bit tighter and a little bit more conservative. But really, everyone kept on saying, well, Vanderlei is a 205 fighter, but they fought at the same weight.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah.
I'm not sure how much credence you can give to that, you know, Krokop is so much a bigger fighter. He's only 220 pounds, so it was very interesting to see such a dominant performance from Krokop.
But, you know, that said, and that is true, that Vanderlei came in, I believe they said he might even weigh 4 pounds more than Krokop. But I think it's quite clear when you look at both of them physically, not that Vanderlei didn't look still pretty ripped, but, you know, you can tell that Vanderlei, as far as his frame goes, you know, Krokop is more so or closer to a natural heavyweight than Vanderlei Silva is.
Mm-hmm.
And Vanderlei Silva is not used to competing, you know, with heavyweights that, you know, consistently weigh over 220, 225 pounds. Mm-hmm. Krokop's got a storied K-1 history, etc. So mm-hmm. I definitely think it was clear that Vanderlei adjusting to the power behind Krokop, that is maybe something he didn't expect. But, you know, it definitely demonstrated that what some people have been saying for a few years is that if you can remain calm and weather the storm that is Vanderlei Silva and get some punches straight down the pipe, you know, he's vulnerable, and that's exactly what happened. And as soon as that eye swelled up, it was, you know, I honestly was saying to myself, you know, that high kick has got a far greater chance of landing, and it,
yeah,
it did.
Yeah, and you see that it opened up the top of his head like a, you know, like a can.
Yeah.
A giant cut in the side of his head after the kick, so you knew it hit, and you knew it hit with some good force, and it didn't look like a devastating kick because it kind of grazed off the top of his head. But I've never been kicked in the head like that, so I'm not really one to say what looks like a devastating kick and what should feel like one and what shouldn't.
Well, it doesn't take much, especially when you kick as hard as Krokop, and then when you look at the way he dismantled Barnett with those body kicks, the liver kicks, you know, we saw him do that against Heath Herring, and that, right away, once he landed a couple of those, you could just see the game plan from Barnett just somewhat disappear, and it seemed to me like he was in survival mode after a couple of those kicks landed to him.
Mm-hmm. And he did actually land a couple of nice kicks of his own, which is
which
was very interesting. I thought if he would have kept that up a little bit more, that might have foiled Krokop. I think Krokop actually, to his credit, did actually fight a bit of a conservative fight because he did follow. I actually didn't think he would even bother following Vanderlei or Barnett down to the ground for ground and pound. I actually thought he would be more willing to stand the fight back up again. But for both two times against Vanderlei and against Barnett as well, he did follow them down and tried out some ground and pound, and that's where he finished. Barnett was on the ground like that, so that was a bit surprising to me as well. I think it could have been over a lot faster in Vanderlei's case if Krokop would have stood back up.
Yeah, and, you know, the fight that really resonated with me as far as Barnett goes, of course, is the fight against Nogueira. And, you know, he really showed an amazing... Everyone has known this about Josh. He's a great ground fighter. But when you put him up against someone like Nogueira, and this is where I was wrong, the fact that he could just completely negate Nogueira's game, and then with that knee bar and the adjustment to the counter, you know, Nogueira countered at the end, and then he went for the knee bar, and... He was amazing, you know, and it's too bad. I know some people are fans of the tournament-style fights, but you really kind of got to feel bad for Josh Barnett in the sense that he probably won't get another crack at Krokop for quite some time, considering this is his third loss. And
well, you know, I don't know. I think that might be that might be up for grabs. I think you'll see Barnett with at least a couple more fights against top-ranked competitors in Pride, and then who knows after that, you know. I think he's got to be considered to be, you know, one or two in terms of being the legitimate number one contender. I could see him squaring off maybe against a Kartanov and then maybe a Nogueira one more time, because I know probably Nogueira will be game, and that will be a great, you know, you can't think that wouldn't be a great rematch for number one, so, I think there's all sorts of possibilities, but I agree that Barnett, and I think sometimes rightfully so, has always been underrated because he's come in out of shape. He looks bad physically sometimes. He's not one of these guys that's super cut and super ripped. He's always been, he's always had the reputation of having superior, ground skills, you know, dating back to the UFC, but there has been times where he's looked very susceptible on his feet. And in this tournament, his boxing has been nothing less than spectacular at times against his opponents, who are far superior strikers. And his ground game is really really unique and interesting looking. And Barnett goes to great lengths to offend at times his opponents by saying that he has no jiu-jitsu training or anything like that, and he's actually a catch wrestler. But we actually got to see how that cashed out against Nogueira, and you could argue, and I think I would argue, that the knee bar at the end won Barnett the decision, because that was a submission that would probably have uh, that that Nibar probably would have ended in a submission because Nogueira was in incredible pain and was actually screaming at the end of the fight. So that's got to be a very influential way to influence judges, you know, leaving a fight.
No, absolutely. I mean, one judge gave it to Nogueira, but I think you're absolutely right. What did you think of the Kharitonov-Emelianenko fight, Alexander-Emelianenko fight? I was really looking forward to that one, and, you know, it certainly delivered. I do have to say that, you know, even though Alexander came away with the win and via the right hand that Kharitonov called on not once but twice, you know, that guy, I mean, Alexander, I know he's tagged a couple people, Thompson, Mariah, with that left hook that he kind of brings down a la, you know, Roy Jones Jr. style, kind of brings it up, and he leaves that left hand drooping and tries to swing it up. But, man, I mean, he wasn't coming close to catching Kharitonov with it, and then he got dropped at the right hand as a result because his left hand's down all the time. And I kept wondering, you know, waiting for that to happen again, but fortunately for him, he got the right hand in and ended the fight.
Yeah, you know, I don't really understand. I'm not a big fan of boxing. I've trained a little boxing myself, but I certainly don't pretend to be an expert in boxing. I know that such an unconventional style, if you can make it work for yourself, is very effective against people who are good conventional boxers. But yeah, I'm not sure how he developed that. It's certainly not indicative of the camp he trains with. But he must think it works for him, and indeed, it worked in that event. But I'm not sure what to say about Alexander apart from people must just get freaked out with that very profoundly unconventional style. And he did get dropped, you know, and that could have very easily been the fight. I thought he did a very good job in turning it around there.
Yeah, no, he definitely did, and I think he's got a future ahead of himself as well. There's some holes in his game, I think, but if he, you know, gets the, I think he's got needs some work to do. It has to be done on the ground, and he's nowhere near Fedor, so it appears, on the ground. I know he's got an extensive Sambo judo background, just like his brother, but it looks like he's got a little bit of some holes in that respect, and then maybe some holes in his stand-up. But I mean, yeah, the guy can punch, and he definitely got a good chin. And definitely he's got that fighter spirit, you know, that his brother has. So it'll be interesting to see what Pride does, you know, assuming that Fedor beats Mark Coleman, which, you know, I think most people are betting on. I'm sure Mark Coleman and his camp are expecting the upset. But it'll be interesting to see what they do with Fedor coming up. And another guy it'll be interesting to see what they do with is Mauricio Shogun Hua. And what did you think of that fight against Cyril? That was a very entertaining fight.
I suddenly transported out of my body into the Pride executives' bodies and said, oh my God, our lives are, Shogun and our lives are flashing before our eyes because this gigantic beanpole is kicking the shit.
Yeah.
And, he's gonna lose the fight. And I thought he was gonna lose the fight a couple of different times. And, Shogun is lucky, I think, and I know everyone loves Shogun now, and he has a lot of big fans, but I'll stand pat and say Shogun was lucky to get out of that alive.
Well, I don't know if I'd go as far to say he's lucky. I think that one thing that he does perhaps maybe better than Vanderlei or his brother and his fellow teammates is that he knows when to quit. He knows when to leave ego behind him and mm-hmm. take a fight to the mat. And I think, you know, despite the fact that everybody regards him as this amazing knockout artist, you know, that's one area where, and he's illustrated this against, you know, Alistair Overeem, that, you know, he just does what's needed to win a fight. And I think mm-hmm. maybe he tried letting it go a little bit too long in that respect in this fight against the Snake, as he's called. But, you know, props to him for getting the fight to the ground and winning the fight where he had the advantage, because obviously he was in a lot of trouble while it was upstanding.
Yeah, I think so, and he fought a very pragmatic fight, and I think he did fight an excellent fight, but you saw, I think, the idea was that Shogun was this phenomenal, unbeatable stand-up fighter, and you know, he looked very ordinary in that fight, and all I have to say is I love the Snake. I hope to see the Snake back.
Yeah, no, I think they would be stupid not to bring him back. He definitely looks like, at the very least, you know, he didn't really get to see too much of his ground game, but I know he's had some success in some of the feeder organizations for Pride, so for sure, I think they'll bring him back. He was extremely entertaining. Last thing, Brendan, because we are getting short on time here, but I wanted to talk to you about the MFC. You went to the Maximum Fighting Championship in Edmonton on Friday night, and how was it?
It was an excellent card. I really enjoyed it. We saw some. It was great because it was great. If only because it was the card that you wanted to go if you had attention deficit syndrome. It was one of these cards where every fight ended in the first round, and except that wasn't necessarily a bad thing. It was very entertaining. We enjoyed all the fights. We were sitting ringside for that, so it was nice. We had a good vantage point. The headline fight, one of the quote unquote super fights, was slightly disappointing. That was Jason McDonald's fight, and he ended up fighting
Neil Barry
from guy who took the fight on a couple days. So it was unfortunate in that regard. Jason McDonald fought a very conservative. We've talked to him before. He's a great stand-up fighter with great boxing, but he fought a very conservative fight and took the guy down and tapped him out.
Which you can't really blame him for, you know.
Very quick. Yeah, I think he was. I think McDonald is a real legitimate contender for any one of the big shows right now, and I think he was. My impression was he was thinking, "Don't break your hand, don't get hurt, end this fight as quickly as possible," and that's what happened. And then we saw another one of our interviews, Victor Velinaki, win the MFC 205 title in pretty spectacular fashion, breaking the jaw getting the TKO victory of Jason Doomsday.
Yeah. So was his jaw, do you know, was it actually broken? Has that been confirmed, or is that just like a suspected?
Well, the word right after the fight was that he had a broken jaw, and he actually disappeared, so we didn't see him afterwards. Okay. But he did get knocked down, and the fight ended by a choke, but the choke wasn't actually sunk in. Apparently it was just his jaw that was whacked out. And then when he actually did stand back up, I could tell by the look on his face, if people actually weren't catching this, that he was very, very uneasy on his feet, and I actually thought he was going to go down again during the decision.
Oh, wow.
So I think he went right to the hospital after that. Fabio Holanda fought Mike Bell.
Yeah.
And that was a nice, that was a really good fight. Holanda, I think, it was a far more experienced practitioner, and he's Patrick Cote's jiu-jitsu coach. He's a Brazilian black belt. He was a far more experienced fighter and did end the fight in the first round, but had Bell had Bell's back a couple different times, and Bell showed some good resilience and some good composure under those conditions. So it was very entertaining, a nice fight. What really impressed me was they filled up the room that the fight was in.
Mm-hmm.
All the bleachers were full. The crowd was actually seemed very informed and very respectful and responsive at the appropriate times. It was a perfect example of what I think the potential for MMA is, and that is a lot of local guys, small local show out fighting, and people are there to see the fights. They're not there to see, you know, Joe Blow that they brought in who fought in the UFC once, you know, or some big pseudo star. But the show was a good grassroots show and attended to watch the people from a lot of the people from Alberta and Western Canada and Canada fight and show what a great sport MMA is. And that's exactly what happened. So
it's pretty funny, you remember you and I going to, I think, MFC 3.
Yeah,
you know, and you look at just the way the crowd has grown and become knowledgeable. I mean, you know, at times, and even some of the other events I've been to earlier on, you know, way back when, you know, sometimes it got to the point where you'd seriously, you know, if it wasn't for the fact that, you know, we were diehard MMA fans, you'd almost find the crowd unbearable. You'd actually second guess attending because it was just filled with people who didn't know anything about the sport, would start yelling certain terms, which I can't say on this show, as soon as the fight hit the ground, and it was just awful. And now here we are a few years later, and you're right, I notice it too when I go to shows, that the people see the submissions, there's maybe one or two morons who still yell a couple stupid comments, but more, you know, more, for the most part, the crowd is so much more informed. It makes for such a better, you know, live viewing, you know, experience without question.
Yeah, you and I are no wilting flowers, but you know, when you go to a show and feel like you're sort of waiting amongst the dregs of humanity, like those early shows, I used to see in Edmonton, you know something's up. You know, the sport is a pretty lowbrow sport, but it's really changed. To be quite honest, it was 180 degrees. There was some, a lot of younger people running around, a lot of older people, a really nice, diverse crowd, a few girls there, you know, which is almost unheard of, actually lots of girls there. And it was really nice. It was a really nice atmosphere. And, you know, you could take your teenage kids there and not be scared that they're, buying meth in the bathroom or anything like that.
Oh, you couldn't have summed it up better. Well, on that note, Brennan, we should get out of here. We'll talk to you later this week, and I think we're going to try to have some people on from the UFC. Hopefully, Fabio Landa is going to join us later in this week, so we'll talk to him about his fight as well if that interview comes through.
Fantastic.
Okay, take care, man.
Best to you, Kelsey.